Amen. Great to see you guys tonight. If you haven't been with us, we are in a series called The Balanced Perspective, which is, I suppose, a bit arrogant to suggest that I can find the balance of issues. But there are certain Christian issues that it's easy to see extremes. And so my objective on these Wednesday night studies is to look at some of these issues and understand some of the extremes and why they are there, and just to postulate a suggested way of looking at some of these issues in a way that might be at least an attempt to balance. I don't think that generally the truth is something that's way out there on one side and everyone's opposed to it. I think most people who believe in the Bible and who love Jesus are trying to find out what he would be saying, and therefore I think there's a value in considering different perspectives and then just seeing what the Word of God says on these issues. Well, the topic for tonight is the topic of rest and Sabbath. It's been a busy couple of weeks for me. I've been scrambling, I've been speaking a lot. We're in the process of moving and everything that's involved with that. And so I'm just like, I'm fried. And I saw this topic coming and I'm like, oh man, I guess I need it really badly. To my defense, at least, I went home from work early today and took a little nap before this study. But the topic of Sabbath rest has been a source of controversy among Christians for almost 2,000 years. From almost the very beginning in the churches, there was a debate, there was an argument over what place does the concept of Sabbath have in the life of a Christian. On the one hand, there are those who would say that Christians are obligated to keep the Sabbath in a legalistic way. They would say, why do you look at the Ten Commandments and say that they're all relevant except for the fourth commandment that, you need to keep the Sabbath holy? Obviously, there are other people, and some of these people believe that we should go to church on Saturday as a Sabbath response, and so in the way that the Jews would go on the Sabbath usually for synagogue, and even in the New Testament as Jesus and the apostles would sometimes go and teach apparently on the Sabbath. The word Sabbath just means it's the seventh day in the Jewish calendar, but the word Sabbath just means to stop. It's like shut down, take a break, do something other than, just it's an intermission. It's a stop before you start up again. And so many people would say that that's even the day that we should worship. In the New Testament, it seems to indicate that in the church, they met on the first day of the week. But they met other days as well. But the thing is, Sabbath, if you understand it, really wasn't about what day you go to church. It was about what you don't do, and it's important to understand that. But so there are some believers who just want to put you under the Sabbath law. This is something that was commanded from the beginning, and this is something that you need to do. And I understand their desire to do that. Seventh-day Adventists, there are many Baptists and other groups that keep the Sabbath. On the other extreme, we see people who would say that the Sabbath has absolutely no relevance at all to Christians. They cite where it shows that Jesus is ultimately our Sabbath rest. We'll look at that a little bit in Hebrews. But so they would just go, look, that was given to the Jews. That was a part of the law. You are no more obligated to keep the Sabbath than you are obligated to make animal sacrifices. They would just go say, if you're going to take one part of the law, you have to take the whole law. We've been saved from that. Jesus fulfilled the law. And so people like that would say, this is just a relic of the old covenant. We are in the new covenant. Under the new covenant, you're free to work around the clock if you want. And that's sort of the idea way over on the other extreme. However, in our day and age where most people have relegated the idea of Sabbath to a relic of history. It's hard to ignore the fact that we have a gaping need for rest today. And so however you pose it in terms of Sabbath, what was apparently the point of the Sabbath, that need still absolutely exists, that you have to find a time when you stop and then you can start up again. You have to find a time when you can be rejuvenated and restored, a gaping need. Like I say, this week I was just scrambling, trying to do everything. I'm late at night, lugging stuff, carrying things, doing stuff. And it's like, it isn't healthy to live our lives as busy as we are, working 7 days a week, never taking a break, never slowing down. That isn't a healthy thing to do. And so I think it's important for us to learn some truths from what the Bible teaches us about rest and about Sabbath, and to see how God might want to be leading us in our lives in a way that isn't, you know, certainly isn't like a legalistic, oh, we have to do this. But there is a reason why God tells people to do certain things and not to do other things, and we can ignore that at our own peril. The concept of Sabbath didn't start with the law. The concept of Sabbath really started with creation itself and God's order of creation as he created for 6 days in Genesis chapter 2, beginning with verse 1. He says, "Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished after God created them. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the Sabbath, the seventh day, and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made." Now, the idea of why in the world did God, who has all power, why did he rest after 6 days of creation? And however you parse out what those 6 days of creation mean, at what point does God need a break? Because our idea of rest is like, you go until you can't go any further, and then you stop and catch your breath. That certainly isn't the case with God. He stopped for a day, for this period of time, not because he needed a break. It doesn't say that God was just worn out. Now, I would understand how you might be kind of tired after creating everything. But he's God. He's omnipotent. That can't be the reason for it. So then people assume, and you'll hear this a lot, that God rested after 6 days of creation as an example to us. Because God knew that we need a break, and so he took a break just to show us what a break looks like. But that isn't really what it says. It says, he rested from all his work which he had done, and God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, set it apart, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. God didn't have a Sabbath, have a rest, because that's something that we would need. He created the idea of Sabbath because of what he had done in creation. Do you understand the distinction there? So Sabbath and the idea of rest is more than just driven by exhaustion. It's more than just, you better rest so that you can be more productive later. Because again, those things don't apply to God, and God's the one who did it first. And it doesn't ever say that he did it to teach us to Sabbath. It's, we need a Sabbath because we have something to learn from the fact that God did that. God had no problem building up his strength so that he could do more amazing things. He had no problem with being exhausted because of what he had already done. There's something more in play than just, you know, recovery or productivity. Now, when God gave Moses the law later, the Sabbath was an important part of it. As I said, of the Ten Commandments, the Sabbath was the fourth one. It's right there, almost in the middle, you know, hugging in the heart of the Ten Commandments. And over in Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 11. Here's one recitation of this. God said, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger, alien, who is within your gates. For, because, in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that's in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Again, God made the Sabbath day special because he had rested. It's interesting that the section starts out by saying, remember the Sabbath day. The idea of rest is something that if we don't intentionally do it, it will just slip our minds. It's one of the dangers of like, and I mean, ultimately for me, I don't think that rigidly I have to set aside a Sabbath day and do that. For me, it really, for a lot of people consider Sunday their Sabbath. I work on Sunday. The fact that I have message to prepare for Sunday means that Saturday is not looking so good either. Plus I have weddings and different things or speaking engagements on Saturdays. So I have to find a different day. But the point is, celebrating a Sabbath, honoring a Sabbath, is to be intentional, and the implication behind remember the Sabbath is if you don't deliberately put this on your calendar, time just slips by, and it absolutely does that. I've seen over the last few months, I've been really busy with a lot of stuff, and it's like, I just haven't taken the time. When I'm like, I have a day, what am I gonna do this day? I'm gonna pack boxes, or I'm gonna load my truck up with a bunch of stuff, or I'm going to make a dump run, or I'm going to, and then trying to get Bible studies ready in the meantime. It's not that I deliberately neglect Sabbath. It's that I don't intentionally remember it. I don't intentionally put it on my calendar as if it's as important as anything else that I do. Another thing to notice is when you're commanded to take a Sabbath, you're also commanded to work for 6 days. People who aren't working for 6 days, the Sabbath really doesn't have the same kind of an effect. So in the same way that we look at six of our 7 days and we plan out and we schedule those things that we are going to do that are productive, at the same time, as important as scheduling our work is to schedule our rest. And so those two balance out. It's interesting that on the Sabbath day, nobody works as far as what God gave here in Exodus. Slaves couldn't work. I mean, that strikes me as kind of funny because you would think of slaves as being those who do the stuff we don't want to do. And for some of these people, many of their slaves were foreigners who wouldn't follow this religion. He even talks about the stranger, the alien within your gates. And like, they can't work either. And they're like, hey, I'm just here on vacation, or I'm just here trying to line up a little work. It would be a great opportunity for somebody who needed work if they would go work on the Sabbath. But no, nobody's allowed to do it. Even the animals get a break. You know, it's something that shuts everybody and everything away from doing stuff. Everyone needs to stop. And again, it's because of God's rest after creation that we are told to observe the Sabbath. Now, God has reasons for everything, and I can't say that absolutely he didn't do it in order to set an example, but every time it's described in the Old Testament, every time it's described in the law, it isn't put that way. It's like, God had a reason for stopping what he was doing for a day, and as a result, we need to remember to do the same thing. And so everything in the text, to me, would indicate that there were important reasons why God was stopping at the point where he stopped. And again, it doesn't totally give us those reasons. Some people have suggested that he wanted to stop and admire what he had created. It's certainly a Sabbath is a good time to reflect back on the week or to plan on what you're going to do next. But this isn't, we don't find this in the text, so I'm not sure. Then God also had this principle in the law where every 7 years was a Sabbath year. Like the fields, the crops and everything, it all had to rest, you know, for that seventh year. And of course, and people who understand such things tell us that that there's like a crop rotation kind of thing where it's really good to let some land rest for a while, but that was all a part of it too. And in case you think that the Sabbath wasn't serious, several times in Exodus and Leviticus and Deuteronomy, it reminds us that if somebody breaks this law, they are given the death penalty. That kind of mystifies me, but it also lets at least suggest to us that this idea of stopping and resting is more than just for our benefit. Because if keeping the Sabbath is only for the sake of our health, well, how is execution for your health? You know, it's like there's something here that's deeper and more significant in some way than that, but it was definitely serious to God. Now, over in Exodus 31 and verse 17, talking about the Sabbath, he said, "It is a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." So God is saying, this is a sign, you know, of, you know, related to creation, that God himself, you know, rested and was refreshed. But there's in this verse 17, it's an interesting conundrum in a way, because it's a sign forever. There's something about Sabbath that is to be perpetual into eternity, into the ages. But then somebody who's like anti-Sabbatarian would say, yeah, but it says it's between God and the people of Israel. So it's like, it's forever, but it's between God and Israel. And then ultimately, it's tied back to creation, which creation happened long before there ever was a nation of Israel. So if you are a part of the fruit of creation, as are we all, then you have to go, does this have some relevance? Does this have some significance to me? If this is something that forever, on the basis of creation, that God is telling us, hey, there's a time to work and there's a time to stop. There's a time to just take a break. And it isn't just because you're tired. There's something more to it than that. It's a reliance in a sense on God in a way that we don't often consider or think about. In the book of Psalms, there are a lot of scriptures that talk about rest. And for them, when they would think rest, they would think Sabbath, because that was all a part of the rhythm of their lives. But like in Psalm 4:8, he says, "In peace, I will both lie down and sleep, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety." Being able to lie down, take a break, take a nap, sleep, is connected to God has made me safe. We have reasons why we can't do that. There's usually something going on that we aren't trusting to him. I'm afraid this morning I woke up at like 3:30 thinking about my driver's license expires, in 2 days, my birthday, which is another thing I've been busy with, you know. But, you know, because people are, you know, oh, let's do this, let's do that for your birthday. But I wake up and I'm like, I sent in my renewal for my driver's license and I haven't heard anything back. And when I did it, you have to mail it in if you change your address. Otherwise, you could just do it online. So I mailed it in, but I'm laying there in bed going, did I include a check? Is that why it hasn't come back? I don't remember writing a check. And I write checks so seldom. You know, I write maybe one check every couple months that I don't keep a check register. It's just, so I have no way of really checking. I'm laying there looking at the ceiling, thinking about this. Then other things start coming to my mind about why haven't we heard back from Social Security on Ann's, you know, Medicare? And I'm like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I'm not getting anything done laying here. So I got up and I went, I was able to online, I just renewed my driver's license, so if I paid twice, so what? And I'll worry about the address change later. But I'm trying to do all these things, and I'm just going, this is the opposite of what Psalm 4:8 says. I can't lay down and sleep sometimes because my mind is racing about other things, and this is partly what Sabbath is about. To be able to say, whatever it is that I have to do, it'll be there in the morning. Whatever it is, if I'm, you know, wrestling with a problem, I can tackle it tomorrow. God will take care of it tonight. Nothing's going to happen tonight that's going to be a tragedy. I love the 23rd Psalm. I quote it every day, but it's David wrote, "The Lord is my shepherd; I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul." That's the kind of rest that we're talking about with Sabbath. It's this idea of he's my shepherd, so I have everything I need. He brings me to a point where I have, you know, everything that, you know, there's no reason for me to want for anything because he provides for me. He feeds me. He leads me beside still waters. If I'm not seeing the still, and there were times I used to look at this psalm and just pray, God, please lead me to green pastures, lead me to still waters, restore my soul. But that's not what David is saying that he will. He's saying that he does. And so that means I have to notice that God has been so good to me. He has given me these still waters. He's led me in green pastures. He is restoring my soul all the time. But that's something that for David, on the run in the wilderness from Saul and everything, I'm sure it was so comforting to be able to go, you know what, but the Lord is my shepherd. And he saw, he had that vision for what that peace feels like. Psalm 46:10, "Be still, or stop striving, and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth." There's a call from God to say, do you ever stop wrestling? Do you ever stop striving? Do you ever take a break? Not that you never work or never wrestle with problems or never problem solve, but there's always this call from God to say, right now, I'm just saying, can you let go of everything you're striving with and just take a little break? Psalm 116:7 says, "Return, O my soul, to your rest, for the Lord has dealt bountifully with you." Psalm 127, verses 1 and 2, "Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives his beloved sleep." In the same way that there is a rhythm for them, it would be when the sun comes up, they're working. When the sun goes down, they go to bed. But there's a certain rhythm even within our days that recognizes, hey, you know, unless God's doing this, I'm wasting my energy trying to do it. If I'm trying to solve a problem and God's not going to lead me, all of my wrestling is not going to fix anything. And so the idea is we have to find a place of rest where we stop that striving, where we recognize, you know what, either God's going to deal with this or he's not. And if I am making a reasonable effort to do what my part is, then I'm not going to make it better by working more. I'm not going to become more fruitful by just putting in more hours. I had lunch with a friend, took me out for my birthday, and she's a really successful advertising person. I knew her from when she was a little kid and she went to our school. But she was telling me how she's the head of a division of an ad agency in Detroit, and she's over Detroit, Chicago, and New York. And she was telling me that they got this new contract for Fiat Chrysler. And it was the biggest deal they've ever had, the biggest contract and everything. But it was absolutely killing her. And she was just thinking about leaving because they had like one-fifth as many people as they needed to do this. It was constantly demanding. She said it was wearing her down. She was feeling sick. And finally, she was at the point where she was ready to quit. And she went and talked to her superiors in the corporation. And they go, oh, yeah, no big deal. Here, we'll just move you over to a different project. And she said she felt so stupid because she was like ready to blow it all up. And she hadn't even told them, I can't keep working 14-hour days, 7 days a week, and neither can my people. And I was so proud of her that she came to that point. But at the same time, she's like, I didn't really have to do this. Even they weren't expecting me to do this. It's just I expected it of myself so much that I was just driving myself. And now she said, you know, her husband's happy with her schedule and she's free to be able to, you know, do the kinds of things that she wants to do, get together with her friends, help in their youth group, in their church and everything. But it's like, you just have to say, look, I don't need to carry the burden of this. This is something that, you know, if God's in it, it'll be fine. If he isn't, there's nothing that I can do to make it work. And I suppose in some ways you'd say it's actually dangerous to make something work if the Lord isn't the one who's building the house. It's not that you can't build a house without the Lord doing it. It's that you run the risk of building something that isn't even supposed to exist. Proverbs 3, verse 24, Solomon says, if you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Doesn't that sound good? Some of you are like, yeah, I could use it right now. And like I said Sunday, if somebody needed to take a nap more than they needed this study, definitely go for it. Proverbs 19, 23, the fear of the Lord leads to life, and whoever has it rests satisfied. He will not be visited by harm. How often do we look at our lives and go, I am satisfied? In fact, I am resting satisfied. Now, in order to rest satisfied, we kind of think that once we get caught up, once we have everything done, then there's some fictitious time in the future whereby, wow, we are finally able to rest satisfied. But the kind of people who are workaholics, even when they retire, they don't know how to rest. They're like, they become obsessed with, you know, whatever else it is that they're doing. It's a choice to be able to say, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. I'm satisfied. God is leading my life, and he's going to protect me, and I'm not going to beat myself up for no reason. If I do that, it's like saying I don't really need him. Several of the prophetic books in the Old Testament, God told the people who had basically rejected him, most of the prophets were prophesying at a time either pre-exilic, before they went into exile, or during the exile, or after the exile, but Israel had suffered greatly. The northern tribes captured by the Assyrians, the southern tribes by the Babylonians and Nebuchadnezzar and taken off into captivity. And so the prophets are writing to these people. And here's something that God said in Isaiah 30, verse 15. For thus says the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel, in returning and rest, you shall be saved. In quietness and in trust shall be your strength. But you were unwilling. God's saying, if you could just shut up and trust and be quiet, if you would just cease striving, if you could only realize that This isn't all on you. If you would discipline yourself to keep a Sabbath, to keep a break, then everything would be fine. But God says, where you guys have gone wrong is you just won't do that. You are not willing to trust. You're not willing to be quiet. You just think that you have to keep going all the time. I think that's something that was not only damning to Israel, but that's something that God would look at our lives and go, man, if you had just found a rhythm to your life, if you had only set aside time to remember to do this, things would be so much better, but you're just not willing to do that, are you? Isaiah 28, verses 10 through 12, he says, for it's precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. In other words, to you, that just sounds like just blah, 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 blah when people read the word. For by people of strange lips and with a foreign tongue, the Lord will speak to this people to whom he has said, quote, this is rest, give rest to the weary, and this is repose, yet they would not hear. He said, God's been speaking to you, not only about working yourself to death, but working other people to death, demanding too much from them, expecting too much, piling problems, taking your problems and dumping them off on somebody else. And he's like, it'd be okay. You know, God's still God. Life is not just a series of emergencies, but we have a choice, and they did, to either hear or to not. Jeremiah 6:16, thus says the Lord, stand by the roads and look, and ask for the ancient paths where the good way is, and walk in it, and find rest for your souls. Get back to a time in your life or in a time in history where people lived more simply and they were able to continue moving down the road, maybe not as fast as you think you are doing it, but get back to that and you'll find rest for your souls. But he goes on to say, but they said, we will not walk in it. God's people rejecting the path that clearly could give them a better life, but instead they wanted to push, they wanted to drive, they wanted to hustle, they wanted to go see how much they could get, how much they could accomplish, driven by their concept of success that's ultimately completely self-defeating. Then in Isaiah, though, there's a promise, Isaiah 26:3, you keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. And that's really at the heart of it. Do we trust God or don't we? Do we allow our mind to dwell on him and what he is doing, or do we look at everything that we have to do, everything that people want us to do, everything that they expect from us, everything we expect from ourselves? The perfect peace comes when we just go, you know, I'm considering what God has to say. I'm thinking about him and I'm trusting in him. This will be okay. Sometimes you get in a point where there's a bunch of stuff happening and you just can't do anything about it. Having a busy time is not in and of itself something that's disruptive. But it's when you are having that and you're stressed and worried about having that, because life has a rhythm. I mean, God did a lot in those 6 days of creation. But for us as well, our attitude toward what we do is as important as how much we do. There are some people who do almost nothing and they're worried about it. They're stressed. They feel it seems like a major, you know, like a badge of honor that we wear to talk about how busy we are. You ask anybody, hey, how are you doing? Oh, man. Good, but I'm so busy. And some of them I'm like, you don't do anything. How in the world can you think that you're busy? But it isn't about how much you do. It's about whether your mind is on him, whether you're receiving the perfect peace that he gives because he keeps us in perfect peace. When we start losing the peace, we're getting a perspective that's kind of off. And so trusting in him is a part of it. So if I tell you, man, it's been really busy for a few weeks, and if that's truly weighing on me, then I need to remember, am I trusting him for that or not? Can I take a break and know that it's still going to be there when I get back? There's the compulsion that comes from every time we see something that needs to be done, we think it needs to be done now. We lose our peace when we have that attitude. There are other places. King Solomon, who wrote Proverbs, it was told to David in 1 Chronicles 22:9, "Behold, a son shall be born to you who shall be a man of rest. I will give him rest from all his surrounding enemies, for his name shall be Solomon," Shalom, peace. "His name shall be Shalom. I will give peace and quiet to Israel in his days." What a beautiful thought. That as much junk as David was dealing with, God was telling him, I'm going to give you a son, and you need to name him Shalom, because he is going to experience peace, and so will Israel for a period of time. It shows us how important it is to God, but it also gives us a clue that the guy who God said would know about peace is also the guy that God says is the wisest person, you know, to ever live. So it gives us at least a clue that the more wisdom that we can receive from God, then the more, you know, our indication of success should not be how much we get done. Our indication of success should be, are we able to pace ourselves? Are we able to experience peace even when things are a bit out of control? Can I find the peace that passes understanding? Because I need that even before I understand. But if you're constantly stressed, the fact that you look at how much of society is being treated for anxiety, and you realize we're doing something that isn't healthy. We're doing something that's unwise. Now, if you're on an anti-anxiety medication, you trust your doctor, not me. I'm not a doctor. But all I'm saying is this is hugely increasing. Therefore, anxiety must be an increasing problem. And the problem really is not the anxiety. Anxiety is a symptom of a deeper problem. And perhaps it's a crisis of not learning how to pace ourselves and to commit our ways to the Lord and to trust him, even when there's stuff that needs to be done, that we just go, yeah, but I don't have to do it right now. And so that's something to consider, that wisdom is finding this place of rest as well. Now, when we come to the New Testament, Jesus revolutionized the idea of Sabbath. By the time Jesus came along, they had so many rules for Sabbath, it was ridiculous. Much more than, you know, as you read in Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, as you read about the Sabbath, it's pretty cut and dried. Like, just quit doing stuff. But man, the Jewish traditions had developed all sorts of things that you couldn't do because they deemed that a violation of Sabbath. They had, for instance, if you had false teeth, and they would make their teeth out of wood, and they would say that if you wear your false teeth, you're carrying a wooden burden. So therefore, you can't wear your teeth on the Sabbath. And they had all kinds of complicated sort of things. If there's somebody who was, you know, starving, you couldn't feed them because it's the Sabbath. If your elderly parents needed help, sorry, can't help you. It's the Sabbath. And it's funny that Jews still today, many of them, even some that aren't all that Orthodox, keep some really rigid restrictions for themselves. And, you know, I've shared with you before that when you're in Israel on the Sabbath, they always keep tourism going because they just need the business. And, you know, they would just say, hey, business is business. But a lot of the people won't participate in that. And somebody decided a long time ago that pushing the button on an elevator is work. And so you can't push a button on an elevator on the Sabbath. And which so naturally, you know, they're very clever people. So they came up with the idea of on Saturday, the computer in the elevator is automatically programmed to stop on every floor. That way you can go where you need to go, but you don't actually have to push the button. Kind of silly. Well, that's the way the rabbis were in the time of Christ. They had ridiculous pile of applications of Sabbath. Jesus comes along. His disciples are picking some grain and munching on it, and they called him on it. They're working on the Sabbath. He's like, that's not work. Come on, don't you even remember where David with his men, they were starving and they came to the house of the Lord and the priest gave them some of the bread that was supposed to be for ritual and, you know, as a part of their worship, and they ate it. You wouldn't starve someone to death because of something like this. And in Mark 2, verses 27 and 28, Jesus said to these religious leaders, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath." And this is a good reminder for every rule. The rules are there for people. The people aren't there for rules. So this idea of Sabbath wasn't made up so that you would have to serve the rule. That, in fact, that goes completely contrary to the idea of Sabbath. If you are resting legalistically, if you are just going, no, it's this time, that's it, no exceptions, can't do it, sorry, no matter what happens, I'm locked in, then you're actually serving the idea of Sabbath rather than having Sabbath serve you. Even if you generally set up a schedule, but then if something happens that you need to modify your schedule, that's okay. Move the time over. Change the time of your appointment or change your break or change the way that you do it. Jesus, you know, rocked their world by suggesting that, you know, look, it's there for your good. And that's something to remember. Sabbath is there for people. It's something that is supportive and helpful, this idea of stopping and taking a break. But Jesus, remember, he said, the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. Ultimately, we don't follow Sabbath, we follow Jesus. He's the Lord. You pray, whatever the Sabbath is supposed to look like for you, and I would never put you in a, you know, legalistic sort of position with Sabbath, but seek the Lord and see what he is telling you. It may be that he's saying, why don't we start with just an hour of sitting and staring? Or why don't we start with, you know, one, like, and I've had friends who suggest that everybody should take, you know, 1 hour a day to just not do much. And then they should take 1 day a week to slow it down. And then 1 weekend a month and 1 week a year where it's just like we're dialing everything back and taking a break. Whatever God leads each of us to do is fine. He's the Lord of the Sabbath. I'm not going to tell you, and you shouldn't tell me, what my Sabbath ought to look like. It only adds stress to you, by the way, when people just keep pestering you. You need to do this. You need to. He's the Lord of the Sabbath. He's the one that we ultimately have to listen to. Jesus promised rest, which again, for them, the Sabbath had not become rest. The Sabbath had become a burden. Ironic, since the idea of Sabbath was to remove burdens, and yet the very honoring of the Sabbath had become a burden. And you remember this in Matthew 11, beginning with verse 28, down through verse 30. Jesus said, "Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light, and you will find rest for your souls." When you report to him for duty, he says, look, if you're worn out, that's not something that I wanted to happen to you. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. What I have for you to do is manageable. So if your burden is becoming unmanageable, come to me. I will give you rest. If you need rest, I'll give it to you. Still, take my yoke and learn of me. I still have work for you to do. But I want you to find a rhythm, and you need to understand that when you know that you're doing what I've called you to do, it won't feel overwhelming. It will feel, and I try to use this as a guideline. Whenever I can get, and like I did this week, get to the point where I'm just like, man, I'm really seriously overloaded. I force myself to face the fact that there are things that I have taken on as a burden that I really shouldn't have, that he really didn't lead me to do those things. And when I face that, then my job is to come to him with my labor as I'm heavy burdened and just go, okay, Lord, which of these things, how can I make decisions that will end up relieving stress? Now, there are some things that some responsibilities I'd love to get out of, and yet it would create an even greater burden for me. And sometimes once you commit to something, it's like you need to just do this, but learn something for the future and how you pile these things on. Because you can't always anticipate. You have to hear from him. Like this weekend, I'm speaking at some men's conference, and I agreed to do it like 6 months ago, before I knew I was going to be moving, before I was, you know, but I knew it was a few days after my birthday, but I thought, I'm not big into celebrating birthdays, so no big deal. I love being able to go and share with people God's word. But then as other things pile up, all of a sudden it's like, oh, shoot, you know, but then I'm getting all these, you're probably thinking, why don't you just cancel? Well, they're doing all these posters with all the speakers, and my face is right there. Facebook keeps telling me, hey, somebody posted something that has your face on it. And like, oh, yeah, there's another. So it's like, I'm going to go speak at this conference. And I know that God will bless me, because right now he doesn't want me to, you know, every word I'm thinking of is a wrong word, but to get out of the, you got to be politically correct nowadays, but there used to be some good words that refer to this, but to just weasel my way, I don't know if the weasels have a lobby, but, you know, to get out of what, you know, I've committed to. But again, it's so important to come to him and to realize, if we're listening to him more, sometimes we don't listen to him because we just don't have the time to. And how ironic that if we had taken the time to listen to him, he may have made the burden much lighter and much easier. But if we're overloaded, there's something wrong on our part. It's not his fault. John 14:27, Jesus said, peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. I give you a peace that's different than the world gives. The way the world gives you peace is, here, drink a bottle, or escape to this activity, or, you know, resist this, flake on your commitments. You know, the world has ways of trying to give you peace. But Jesus says, my peace is different than that. My peace is something that, you know, can really, from the heart, remove the trouble that's in your heart. And you won't have to be afraid of what's going to happen as a result of how you've medicated your peace. Mark 6:31, Jesus, talking to the disciples, said, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. It's ironic that after Jesus said this, it did say they got away in a boat, but as soon as the boat landed, there were a ton of people there, and Jesus is healing people. So it doesn't, getting away to a desolate place doesn't always work the way you think it would, but at least it shows that Jesus was thinking about the fact that, you know, you guys, we've been busy, and let's get away. Come with me and let's go. And it's important for us to get away once in a while. There are times when, I mean, I think of, you know, women who are raising little kids and stuff. Like, how do you lecture them about you just need to get away? But every one of us has to find a way. Even if sometimes getting away for rest may just mean locking yourself in the bathroom for a while, you know, and with the kids watching a video. But to understand that when we've been busy, we have to deliberately set a priority to get away. When I do this, I think I should do this more. When I don't do it, I begin to feel the weight of just not doing it. So Jesus at least acknowledged that that was necessary. But I love, too, that the one time Jesus told them, let's go get away to a desolate place, they got there and it wasn't desolate at all and it was fine. And that's a lot of times the way that my plans go awry. Jesus exemplified rest. I love the story in Matthew 8 when there was a great storm on the sea. The boat was being swamped with waves. They were about to go under. And you remember what Jesus was doing? He was sleeping in the back of the boat. And I sometimes say, if you look at your life and it seems like Jesus is asleep, it's nap time. He's not saying, you take care of things while I rest. He has this rhythm about him where he can sleep in a storm, but he can also, don't think that he needs us if he isn't doing what we think he ought to be doing. He does things his own way. There are times in your life where you just don't hear from God. That doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. It just means he doesn't have anything he wants to say right now. Do I have the peace to curl up next to him in the back of the boat and just go, if he's napping, I'm going to make sure that I do too. They would have been fine. I don't fault the disciples, even though Jesus kind of rebuked them for like, well, what was your problem? Where's your faith? But it's, you know, if he has the kind of rhythm that we go, I can take a nap while waves are coming over the boat. Can I do that in my life when waves are coming over the boat, when things are looking bad, when it's a difficult time and there are things I'm worried about? What a powerful discipline if we can, in the middle of a frenzied life, just go, you know what? I'm just going to take a break right now. I'm going to stop this for, and not for a week or a month. I'm going to take some time and take a break. Now, the book of Hebrews, Paul talks a lot, but of course, the book of Hebrews was written to the Jews, and Sabbath rest was so important to the Jews that Paul builds a strong argument about Jesus based on the whole concept of rest, based on the whole concept of Sabbath. And I'll read this to you. Therefore, Hebrews chapter 4, verse 1, since a promise remains of entering his rest, let us fear lest any of you seem to come short of it. For indeed the gospel was preached to us as well as to them, the Jews in the Old Testament, but the word which they heard did not profit them, nor being mixed with faith in those who heard it. For we who have believed do enter that rest, as he has said, so I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. So he says, in the Old Testament, they were supposed to understand the concept of rest. They were supposed to understand the concept of Sabbath. But as we saw in Isaiah and Jeremiah, and you know, it's like they just couldn't actually bring themselves to do it consistently. So he is saying, Paul is here saying, it's such a tragedy that a history of God wanting to do nothing more than give rest to his people, they never got there. Although the works were finished from the foundation of the world, he's connecting it to creation and saying, the world was the world. It was there. What are you doing that's so important that it somehow is more important than creating a universe? For he has spoken in a certain place of the seventh day in this way, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works, and again in this place, they shall not enter my rest. Since therefore it remains that some must enter it, and those to whom it was first preached did not enter because of disobedience, again he designates a certain day, saying in David, today, after such a long time, as it has been said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, then he would not afterward have spoken of another day. There remains therefore a rest for the people of God. For
For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works, as God did from his. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience."
Paul here in Hebrews is seeing Jesus as he is what Sabbath was about. And so it's true, he is our rest. But he isn't saying it in a way that says, so we positionally have this relationship with Jesus, so rest isn't necessary, because he's talking to people who believe in Jesus and saying, there is a danger that we will miss out on the true rest that is supposed to come, that God has prophesied from the beginning, that ability to stop, that ability to trust, that ability to be satisfied. It's a real danger that we could miss out on that as much as the Jews who died in the wilderness under Joshua, you know, experienced that lack of ever getting to the point where they sensed this rest. They had the ability to actually trust God. And this is something that should concern us, that he could be telling us, you have an opportunity to find rest, but there is a danger that you won't. If you do the same things, if you disobey what God says and you don't enter his rest, then you're in the same boat as the people who ultimately perished in the wilderness during the book of Numbers and those 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. And that's challenging to me, to know that I can look at, oh, it's so sad that they wouldn't go into the promised land. And going into the promised land, part of why they didn't want to go in is they were afraid of the battles that they would have to fight. And yet, avoiding the conflict and the work that was in front of them caused them then to ever miss out on that rest that is, you know, when you can celebrate. Now, the children of Israel who finally went across and into the promised land, imagine the celebration that they had when the walls of Jericho fell. And it's like, man, some of them, I'm sure, were going, man, we're walking around the city. This is stupid. They're laughing at us. They're throwing stuff at us. And here, you know, now today we have to go around 7 days. But they did the work. And as a result, when the walls fell, the roar, the celebration was like, wow, if you won't do the fighting, if you won't do the marching, you'll never have the rewards. But don't ever just think that. And part of their problem was they jumped right off into the next challenge and did it in their flesh. And you know, it was a huge problem for them. But for each of us, these things happened as an example to us. Is there something that we are missing out on in life because we don't regard rest as being something that is really worth taking the effort, paying the attention, and the focus in order to make it happen? Again, this isn't legalistically Sabbath. This is the principle. Can we ever stop? Can we ever take a break? And they couldn't. So I think, kind of in conclusion, we need to ask ourselves the question, when do we stop? Not how do we stop. When do we stop? When do we say, that's enough for now? There are times when we feel like, I feel like stopping and never doing anything again. People who don't pace themselves end up crumbling under the pressure. But we have to ask ourselves, how can I create some sort of a break? How can I take some time when I go, you know what? Right now, I'm just not going to do anything just because. We shouldn't wait until our tank is empty in order to rest. That's not what the Sabbath is. It's doing it way before then. I know for me, there are times when I've just been like, man, I am so worn out. Ann goes, hey, why don't you go get away for a couple days and spend time with the Lord? And I'm like, yeah. And she's always so good to encourage me to do that. But sometimes I've done that, and I'm just like, I get away, and I'm so exhausted. I just lay down and sleep. It's better than nothing, but it isn't the kind of rejuvenation that I maybe really need. Sabbath is not about go till you drop, and then recuperate quickly so that you can get back in the battle. Sabbath is being willing to pause when things are going fine, when, hey, everything is going well. That's the time. The times for us to stop are not when things are crumbling. The time for us to stop is way before then. We so are obsessed with being necessary, with being needed. We find so much of our, you know, validation from, you know, oh, everybody needs me, everybody wants me, that to be able to say no when you don't need to, just because, that's really an important part at the core of all this. Don't wait until you're exhausted. Now, if you're exhausted, take a break by all means, but don't expect that to necessarily rejuvenate you, unless you take a break, but then you go, and I'm doing this again in a week. I'm going to take a break in a week as well, because you have to get on that rhythm. See, rest requires trust. If you are worried about what's going to happen, if you stop what you're doing, then it shows that actually you think that everything depends on you doing what you do. It's one of the reasons, I'm sure, why God wants us to rest, is because we demonstrate that we trust Him. It's interesting that two of the commands of God in the Scriptures, if you read the law, the vast majority of everything within the law is about what you give, and it's about the Sabbath. See, both of those are problematic for God's people so often. Why? Because how can I give? If I give money to the Lord, how am I going to pay all of my bills? What if an emergency happens and I don't have it? Giving demands that we commit a portion of what we have, whatever God leads us to do, and go, no matter what happens, I'm going to trust Him. I'm going to be obedient. And the Sabbath is the same thing. The two most valuable resources that we have are money and our time. And so with tithing and with Sabbath, He is saying, give me a chunk of the two things that mean the most to you, the two measures by which you gauge how things are going. I don't have enough money and I don't have enough time. And God goes, give it to me. An amazing thing happens. Rest celebrates abundance. To be able to say, you know, I've done enough for now, says, I'm good. It's over the top already. There's a Indian tribe up in the Pacific Northwest that used to have a celebration. I don't know if they still do, but it was called Potlatch. And what they would do is this village, everyone in the village would bring valuable things, furs or, you know, other clothing that they liked and whatever. They'd build a big bonfire and people would throw some of their valuable stuff into the fire. And the person who threw the most stuff in the fire was considered to be the most honorable. It was a status symbol as to how much stuff you could burn up. And I, you know, with today, with the craze for minimalism, where people are understanding, it feels so good to get rid of stuff. It feels so good just to, because what you're saying is, I have more than I need. It's why if you could just go look in your closet and go, I can get rid of half of this stuff and I won't even miss it. And it might be all that somebody else has. Or we look in our garages or we look in, you know, closets and everywhere else and just go, I'd be fine without most of this stuff. But to actually take it and get rid of it is to prove that to yourself. And it actually feels really enriching to get rid of things. And by the same token, when we're like, okay, there's stuff that needs to be done, but I don't need to do it right now. I'm fine. What I have done already is plenty. And I'm just taking a break. It is amazing that ultimately you, of course, will be more productive when you get back on the job, when you take some time off of the job. But that's not why you do it. You do it because you trust God.
He tells us to do it. He did it first. There was something to him that was worthwhile in stopping and not completely understanding all of the reasons why he did it. Scriptures don't explain it, but they say that's the basis on which you should also stop. And we do that or we don't. We aren't legalistically bound to a specific Sabbath obedience. Colossians 2:16, and I use this with people who tell me that, you know, Christians need to keep the Sabbath, you should worship on Saturdays and everything. Paul said in Colossians 2, don't let anyone judge you according to Sabbaths. Again, as Jesus said, the Sabbath is there for you. You're not there for it. So if anything that we're talking about concerning rest makes you feel burdened, like I need to do it, you miss the point. That's not what it's there for. And nobody should judge you about how, you know, for, and so after this, after tonight, don't go to somebody you know and go, you should listen to this because you really need to do this. I've been telling you and you ought to do it. And then some of us are just going to look at ourselves and go, oh, it wears me out just thinking about this. That's not what it's about. That's not what the Lord would have us to do at all. Don't let anyone judge you according to Sabbaths, and you don't judge yourself according to Sabbaths. But just ask God to lead you and show you in what way can I. I can certainly say that over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to set aside half a day to just do nothing and see what effect that has on you. As God's creatures, as those who are a fruit of his creative efforts that resulted in the very first Sabbath, we neglect the practice of regular rest to our own peril. We can't assume that if we don't change in this area, if we don't discipline our lives in this area, that, it's no big deal. Now, don't judge yourself. Don't let other people judge you. But between you and God, understand this. There are reasons why he tells us to pause. Make sure that, you know, you understand. If you don't do that, you know, you'll pay for it in one way or another. And again, Sabbath wasn't about when you worship. It was about when you stop your regular work. And for everyone, Sabbath might look differently. But it's the idea that there should be a time during the week when you do something differently than what you do the rest of the time. If there's something that you spend 6 days doing, that seventh day, do something other than that as an interruption. If somebody is working in manual labor, for instance, they should do something that's not manual labor. But if somebody is doing research and writing for 6 days, then on the seventh day for them, it might be to swing a hammer or do some chores or things like that. The idea is disrupting your ordinary schedule, taking a break from whatever it is that you normally do. Your day off shouldn't look like all your other days, and it's really easy to fall into that. And I beat myself up over it, and then remember you're not supposed to judge according to Sabbaths. Stop your regular work. Sabbath isn't about what you do. Sabbath is about what you stop doing. Now, for you, Sabbath might look like a round of golf. It might look like, you know, throwing a hook in the water and catching fish. It might look like watching a baseball game. It might look like binge watching a show that you really like. You know, people are doing that more and more, and I think because with Netflix and things like that, it's easy to watch a whole season at once. And we do it sometimes and feel guilty. Maybe sometimes the reason you just feel like, man, I want to watch this show for 5 hours. Maybe the reason you're even feeling that way is because there's something inside of you that's telling you, you need to just shut everything else and do this. Don't beat yourself up over it. Sabbath is what you're not doing. It's not about what you're doing. Take a break from your routine. Maybe it's hiking. Maybe it's riding a motorcycle. Maybe it's just taking a drive in your car. As long as it's a break from your routine, it can be watching a Little League game, you know, but I remember as a kid, I loved baseball. It was my favorite sport, but we were Christians. So when I got to the age where the games were on Sundays,
I wasn't able to play anymore because Sunday was like the Lord's day. It was a Sabbath. And what I loved to do was taken away from me. And I never really totally was able to get back into it. I still dinked around with it. I played a lot of softball and things like that. But the Lord's day took away from me something that was such a healthy escape for me. When I was dealing with the mental illness at home and all the issues, there was something about just being out there on a baseball field that was a Sabbath for me. But somebody, because of this legalistic, you know, approach, decided that, nope, you can't do that because it's the Sabbath. You need to sit at home and read your Bible. And that's stupid. I know I still get into this with people about that movie Chariots of Fire, where Eric Liddell, the Olympic athlete, was, you know, a Christian. He later became a missionary, and he was a Sabbatarian. He refused to run on the Sabbath. So as a result, it cost him an Olympic medal and all that, and Christians just, oh, that's so wonderful. Growing up the way I did, that movie disgusted me. That somebody thinks that even though, yes, when I run, I'm feeling God's pleasure, but not on the Sabbath. That kind of legalism is something that, hey, maybe it inspires you, but I've been there. That isn't Sabbath. Sabbath is the opposite of this. So, you know, and I think that, you know, the reason the Sabbath has such a bad rap is because people turn it into a legalistic thing. Jesus came and deliberately tried to turn that upside down. His followers, many of them still think that, you know, oh, there are certain things that we don't do on this, you know, that's silly. Finally, one more note. Revelation 14, verse 11, speaking of those who reject Jesus and those who follow the beast, the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night, these worshipers of the beast and its image, and whoever receives the mark of its name. One of the final descriptions of hell is that that is a place with no rest. We can experience hell on earth if we don't have rest. Rest is a part of what heaven's about. Not that we are not going to do anything in heaven. There will be the same kind of rhythm, no doubt, that God established from creation. But when we choose to live our lives without rest, we are basically choosing to allow hell to creep in on a life that really could do better than that and that God wants us. Hell equals no rest in some ways. So that's something to think about. Let's pray. Lord, I'm just so touched by your desire for us to rest. But I'm so challenged by the fact that this is something that you did so that it isn't a sign of weakness or collapse to rest. It's a part of the rhythm of life that you established, that you wanted it to be this way, that rest is every bit as important as you could on one day create the sun, the moon, and the stars, and on another day you rested, and that rest day was the pinnacle of your creation. Help us to discover that in a meaningful way in our lives. Help us not to go to the error of being legalistic and miserable about this. But help us also to not neglect the fact that from creation, rest was to be a part of the way lives are, and help us to find those times of rest. Lead and guide us, and this is personal, so please speak to each of us about what we might adjust in our lives so that we are considering and accommodating the way that you made us. Thank you for this evening and for these scriptures. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. God bless you guys. We'll see you next week.